White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
That's right, you got it, boys and girls. That's me, Terrible Tommy, in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana. Beautiful day today, and finally the heat spell broke somewhat. It's pretty a lot cooler today, so I can get some more work done out in the jungle. Yeah, it's July the 26th, 2016. Can't even get the damn year right, man. I'm going to hell in a handbag here, man. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations and orders and all kinds of that good stuff. Like Soupy Sales used to say to the kids' show, and on his show, he used to say, "Now, kiddies, sneak into the bedroom and take all the money out of your dad's pockets and send it to me." He lost his job for that one. Well, chaos is in high gear. The 100th monkey is on the road, I'm telling you. Now, if you'll go back even a few years in my radio shows, and I hate to brag, but I'm going to. I've been telling you this, it's coming. Just be calm. Don't get excited. Don't go off half-cocked. And don't wear a suicide vest anywhere. Because it's coming. And it's here now. Yeah, every day, every other day, it's here. The news is getting more interesting all the time. So I woke up this morning and they said some ISIS guys had cut the head off a priest over in a church over there in France. Boy, they really going after France. And you know that one of the reasons for France? Because France has imported more of these people than about anybody else. They've been doing it for a long time. So they're, I guess they feel at home, but then they feel at home and then they get upset with something and they go nuts. But I like the way they turn this around into a right-wing thing. It's probably a right-winger, probably a extreme right-winger, you know. And they're always trying to turn it into that. Well, I don't believe in using the term right-wing at all anymore, because I know I'm not a right-winger. I'm a racist. It's pure and simple. And as a racist, I can go left or right, depending on what we're talking about. So that's the way I feel about it, and that's I'm sticking to it. So the thing that they're doing, though, they're trying to orient the propaganda so it has something to do with has all to do with Christians or something like that. Well, the fact is that the majority of the Western world is secular and not really religious. I mean, most of the people that say they're religious are just mouthing it. They're not seriously religious. So we're basically secular. So when these creeps come after us in the Western world, they're coming after white Aryan people. That's the target, white Aryan people. They're not that much interested in blacks unless they're a cop or something. They're not too much interested in people who are, I don't see them going after any of the Quakers. I don't see them going after the Amish people. No, they're just after white people. And if white people happen to be in a Christian church, well, that's fair game. So don't let them bullshit you. And if media doesn't want to say this, the media does not want to say it's an attack on the white Aryan Western world. And that's why you got to know that we're the target. Wherever it's convenient, we're going to be the target. That's why you have to kill the sons of bitches the minute they show their lousy head. If they come down the street at you and they look suspicious and they got a bulge in their pocket and they're reaching for it, well, you know what you got to do, man. You know what you got to do. These Democrats are so cowardly. Of course, the Republicans are too, for that matter. But they're all of a sudden trying to shift this all on the Russians. That they released the emails from Hillary, the bitch. So what? I don't care if the Chinese or the Mongolians or the South Africans or the niggers from the Congo release that information. We need it out there because she is a criminal and a crook. And trying to make excuses it's the Russians. So what? If it was the Russians, I'm glad. I hope they do more of it, you know. In fact, that's one way to keep different governments straight, is one government expose the criminal actions of the other government, and then the other government come back and expose the crimes of the other one. That works out pretty good. That's why I listen to the left, and I listen to the right, and I listen to the Republicans, and I listen to the Democrats. I listen to the Jews. I listen to the anti-Jews. I read the Israeli newspapers, the ones that are in English. I read from their magazines and so forth, and that's the way I keep up on things, man. You got to keep up on things. You can't go around being a dumb ass, you know. That's the trouble with the right wing. Almost none of the right wing really study the situation. They don't watch all this stuff. They don't lay there in the middle of the night and listen to the satellite news and so forth like that. But they always have an opinion. Or if they don't have an opinion, they'll call Mr. Plastic Man and say, "What's your opinion?" And he'll give them his manufactured opinion. And his manufactured opinion is basically based on not much more than anybody else. Probably a lot less. Got a call from one of my contacts the other day. He was going on and on about this situation. And he got on about Duke running for Senate. Well, I don't give a shit if Duke runs for Senate. You know, keeps him busy. Keeps him out of our hair. I liked him even better when he was over there in Russia or wherever he was running around. You know, stay out of our hair. Yeah. Guy kept saying, "Well, yeah, but he wrote some good books." I said, "Well, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Maybe those books were written by a ghostwriter Jew. Like when he wrote all those nasty books back in the 70s about how to kill white people. And how for young girls dating boys to give them oral sex and all that kind of stuff. I wonder how Duke knew about that. I wonder how Duke knew what's the best way to give a guy oral sex. I always ask myself that. That's an interesting question. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I'll say, well, some professional prostitute told him all about it, so then he just wrote it down. We'll let him off the hook there. I won't let him off the hook for the book he wrote pretending to be a black separatist radical on how to kill white people and why they should kill white people, and they should kill white people all the time. Won't let him off the hook for that book. If you ever see any of these paperbacks around like that, pick them up. I don't even have one of them. I should have got them when they were available. Well, I guess old Bernie turned out to be a regular Jew. I thought he was maybe sort of a tame Jew, like Rockwell used to say, but he's the same Zionist type lion Jew the rest of them are. the one good thing that'll come out of all this is people will have more and more suspicion of Jews in general. They're already growing very suspicious of the Jews because of the Palestinian situation. But now Bernie's led him off into the weeds. They're going to get him elected, so he's going to do great things. And then he turns right around and says, well, Hillary's the best thing we've got, and we've got to do it. And all those followers of his that were very radical about it are left out in the woods. That's a good thing for us. It just proves our point. There's hardly any tame Jews around. Almost all of them are false flags and so forth. Zionist Jews, you name it. Now, I got an email or a call the other day, I forget which, that Matt Hale, and, you know, he's a POW, and he's down at Terre Haute Prison here, U.S. prison here, and only about 100 miles from me. And he wanted me to read his new book. The title is The Racial Loyalist Manifesto. And I got a copy of it today in the mail. Got a nice cover on it. Of course, Matt Hale was, of course, set up big time by a creep up in Chicago that I guess he's still walking around. But the unfortunate thing is I've tried to counsel these guys over the years to be extremely careful who you're dealing with. And this thing of having security chiefs and all that stuff, well, you don't need a security chief and all that stuff. I've been operating for 40 years, and I never really needed a bodyguard. Like Bob Miles, Reverend Bob Miles said, he said, I don't have a bodyguard because I'd end up having to rescue the bodyguard. Well, I did have a bodyguard one time. He turned out to be employed by the San Diego Police Department. And fortunately, I eluded being set up with him. So they've tried to set me up several times, and I've eluded it. That's why I'm into lone wolf stuff. I don't need people around me that are going to, first time they get in trouble, they're going to dump on me and all that kind of stuff, like they did in Portland, Oregon. You can be set up on totally lies, you know, like Mahon's still fighting his case, trying to get it into the Supreme Court, but he won't get it into the Supreme Court. We tried that route on the Portland civil trial and submitted our case to the Supreme Court, but they didn't even hear it. They're not going to hear cases like that anyhow, so, and then once they get you, they don't want to let you go. I'm telling you, look at our boys from the order, all those POWs that are still in there, when niggers that have committed far worse crimes many times have gotten out. And they've had the help of all these sob-sister progressives, white, to get them out, screw the white man, you know. He don't deserve any help. So, anyhow, Matt's doing a hard time, and I don't expect him to get out very soon. But I told him, look, I'll read this book of yours, and if I like it, I'll promote it. But if something happens that I don't like it, and I'm not going to nitpick over little things, but if I have something really bad about the book, I won't promote it. Deal? Deal. Okay, so here's what I think I'm going to do. I've got the book right in front of me right now, and I think I'm going to start reading it a chapter at a time. Maybe I'll spread it out over a few weeks. I want you guys to comment to me what you think. Now, like, I'll read a chapter today, And I want you to email me and tell me what you like about it, what you don't like about it, what you love about it, what you don't love about it. And this is this a book that you think is good for the struggle? Of course, you know, books don't win struggles. People win struggles, but people read books that help them read struggles, win struggles. I used to have to get that straight with people. Just writing a book don't do shit. You know, Duke and all these people write books, and some of the books are really good. But they don't win a war. A book just sits on a shelf and gathers dust. Unless somebody picks it up and takes the ideas and put them into action like a general and wins a war. So I don't get too excited over people who write books. Most books are too thick anyhow. Good books are thin. Spengler's Decline of the West is too thick. It's two volumes. It says a lot of good things, but by the time you get done with the chapter, you're saying, now what the hell did he say? You know, Imperium's another one. It was a good book, but it's too thick, 500 pages. It's just too hard to digest all that stuff. So you almost have to go through and just underline the good stuff and forget all the rest. So I'm going to do that, and I want you to cooperate with me, and then based upon what you say, in fact, I'll write down what you email me, and we can put it all together and send it to Matt, all this positive stuff on the book, if you've got positive and negative stuff, okay? So here we go. The Racial Loyalist Manifesto by Matthew Hale. I see one thing that pisses me off right off down at the bottom. The Racial Loyalist Party. People who are inclined to the right wing, whether they're racial or not, tend to like this idea of party. We'll put a bunch of people in a party. That's the democratic approach, which usually doesn't win anything. Democracy does not work in the long run. It may seem like it for a while, but for racists to start political parties is a waste of time. The first chapter is entitled Who We Are and What We Want. Okay. I guess today we'll just read the preface. The purpose of this manifesto is to unite, both in name, in doctrine, as well as in organization, all who are loyal to their white race on the face of this earth. Well, that's a pretty big undertaking. It is ambitious in scope and is universal in appeal. It is a unifying document for all who are racially loyal. One race demands one struggle to preserve that race. And thus this manifesto serves that struggle. Now and furthermore, forevermore, it is thus written not only for the immediate present, but also for the distant future. It transcends all lines on maps, just as our race transcends those lines. It is for every nation of our race, just the same of any other. What the Jew Karl Marx did for the infernal worldwide communist ideology, we now do for the basic organic loyalty to our kind and its future that we all possess instead, provide a manifesto that we will unite our racial loyalist comrades as one force and give them a better understanding of what we fight for the common cause. Whatever flaws this manifesto may possess are those of the author alone. Its lofty purpose, though, remains untouched, that through it our struggle to save our white race may now, for the first time in history, and permanently march forth with a united power and united will for the victory of all which we hold dear. Thus, while the author invites the reader to blame him for whatever imperfections he may discern, in what is set forth here, you should not lose sight of the success that will be ours when the principles that are set forth here are fulfilled. That, of course, is what matters most. We call this Racial Loyalist Manifesto because racial loyalty is what the white racial cause is all about, and because no other term has ever been able to describe our cause better, both root and branch. It is our loyalty to our own kind that compels us to fight for its best interests, for its separation from other races, for its culture, and for its life. It is our loyalty to our kind that demands that we struggle for its well-being in every sphere. In addition, loyalty is a word that stirs powerful and positive emotions like practically none other, and we mean to utilize such emotions for the success of our great cause. Well, I would say that I think that the bulk of the white race has forgot, if they ever knew, what the word loyalty means at all. That's my remark. What is remarkable is only that it took until now for such a book with such a title to be written, when all along it is loyalty to our kind that has always truly been the issue. Well, I think it's really survival of the fittest, survival of the fittest of the white race. That's my own opinion. Men have an unfortunate tendency to pass by the obvious. They miss the forest for the trees, and sometimes even a single tree at that. All of that is corrected within these pages, and that is long overdue. Just as a son is loyal to his mother, the mother loyalty to her son, the brother loyal to his sister, and the sister loyal to her brother, we racial loyalists are loyal to our extended racial family, our white race. It is that loyalty that is the basis for all that we do it for. Our love for it and our loyalty to it are one. Well, I'd venture to say that not too many families in this world are loyal to each other. I've always been pretty lucky myself, but I think that this loyalty thing among families, in fact, there's been many times when they kill each other, and the crown prince of the king kill the king, and so forth like that. So it's a romantic word, loyalist, but very often not used at all. The author has deliberately avoided injecting his particular personality into the text of this manifesto proper due to the fact that it has largely been the various differences in personality and ego among racial loyalists in general that have thus far prevented our adherents from banding together for a common cause. I don't know about that. I think that you're always going to have those type of things as long as there are men, as long as there's a white race. Anyhow, hence the author has placed his entire focus on stating those principles that all who are loyal to our white race share, or at least will upon further reflection, rather than make this discourse in any way about him or his personal background, the only reference to his person being here in the preface itself. That said, however, there is no denying the fact that the author hopes that his own heavy personal sacrifice for the cause of our people's future will be something that will command such respect and appreciation that the reader will be all and more receptive to what he has to say as someone who has earned the right to speak for our cause like few others, and furthermore as someone who has had an infinite amount of time on his hands to make sure that he is right. Well, I have some disagreements there, of course, because Matt talked himself right into the situation he's in. He had been forewarned before on several occasions, but yet he walked into the trap, so it's too bad. But he didn't need to be in prison at all. For the past 12-plus years, as someone imprisoned in solitary confinement by the Jewish government of the United States for crimes that I not only did not commit, but totally on tape refused to commit. Well, when you talk about Jewish government, you've got to talk about all the so-called Judaized white Christians out there. There's far more white Aryans involved in the disloyalty to the white race than there are even Jews. I always like to remind people of that. I have naturally had an extraordinary amount of time to think about our race and its future and what is necessary to secure that. And by my being removed altogether from the normal hustle and bustle of daily struggle to make ends meet in the free world, I have developed a breadth of perception that can be matched only by those who have found themselves in the same circumstances. In any case, it is only because of love, respect, and appreciation that I have from you, my comrades all over the world, that I have deigned not to publish this manifesto anonymously, something that I had thought about doing in order to drive home the fact that this manifesto is only about in the interest of saving our white race and not any personal interest or ego on my part. However, since I ended up deciding that its success in uniting all who are loyal to our white race would more likely be obtained with my name on it than without it, I decided to publish it under my name after all. Hence, I attached my name to it only to help its success. I cannot deny, though, a great sense of personal satisfaction in the fact that I have continued to fight for our great cause regardless of my false imprisonment, and that indeed it is that imprisonment that made this manifesto possible. Had I remained a free person, nobody's free, leading the Church of the Creator as I did, it is doubtful I would have ever had the time or inclination to write a manifesto for the entire racial loyalist movement. It thus gives me great joy to know that my sacrifice has not been in vain. It is my hope, in fact, that the day will come when this manifesto will have proven to have been such a blessing to our people and their future that it will be deemed by the future generations to have been well worth my own personal misfortune. For when handed a lemon in life, it behooves us to make lemonade out of it, or as here, for me to extract its seeds and sow them in order to found a secure future for my people whom we love so much. In sum, aside from the merits of this manifesto, standing on their own, I am happy to have made the present persecution of my person backfire on those who are responsible for it, to have given our race something in return for that which was so wrongly taken from it by virtue of my imprisonment beginning so many years ago. The pain of every living creature ends sooner or later, but it is the works of men that live on in the hearts and minds of others. I'm glad that my own work here will outlast the predicament that engulfs me now. As stated, I led the Church of the Creator, and I did so until my arrest in January 2003. That church was founded in 1973 by Ben Klassen, who also founded our entirely new religion, Creativity. With the publication of our first Bible, Nature's Eternal Religion, and who later expanded it with the White Man's Bible, it is the leadership for which I am most well known at the time of this writing, both among the adherents of racial loyalty, loyalist cause, as well as among the general public. I furthermore wish to note that I remain devoted to that church and the religion, so that there may be no confusion on that point. One of the biggest mistakes Ben Klassen made was, and I tried to talk him out of it, calling it a church. There's a tremendous amount of people that are turned off immediately when they hear church. You don't even get past the front door. The last thing a white racist separatist wants to do is call his group a church. This is because at first glance, one could make the mistake of thinking that the issuance of this manifesto represents some kind of a break with the teachings of Ben Klassen on my part. That, however, is not the case. It is true that Ben Klassen, in his later writings, argued for the abandonment of any kind of political struggle to save our white race in favor of a religious one, while, on the other hand, the avowed purpose of the manifesto as the political, not religious, unification of all who are loyal to their white race on this earth. And I comment, the reason Ben Klassen became discouraged with the creativity movement was the kind of people it was attracting. It reminds me of when I took over leadership of the Klan in California. I set out to build a political organization, run people for office and all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't long to where you would recruit someone and then they would recruit down, not up. And I learned that a long time ago in selling products. You want an agent, you want a salesman, you don't sell down, you sell up. So it seemed like everybody I recruited to my clan, told them what I wanted, went out and didn't do what I said. Or they did it with the wrong people. They recruited down instead of up. And I don't mean down and having money and things like that. I mean down in morally corrupt people that you could not instill the kind of loyalty like he's talking about in this book in, because they were incapable of understanding it. They'd been raised wrongly and many times without a father and so forth. Anyhow, on with the book. However, Ben Klassen was also a practical man who wrote that practicality and indeed utilitarianism into the very religion that I was a creator embrace. And thus it is possible to do things differently than creativity specifically calls for, while at the same time fulfill its teachings. Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's not what you call something, it's what it does. You could call it the Charlie Brown Society, and if they had the balls to do what needs to be done, it would be respected and revered and feared. So it's not what you call something that makes it powerful and strong and fearful. That's what I say. As he wrote in our fourth commandment, the guiding principle of all your actions shall be what is best for the white race. Well, that's true in a way, but you got to understand the divisions of the white race, the ruling class and the working class. And you have to figure some way of unifying that somewhat, if not by voluntarism, by force. And thus, since the simple fact of the matter is that I view the worldwide banding together of all racial loyalists to be indeed best for our white race, and indeed obviously so, it is that commandment that in fact guides me now. Well, Tommy says, you've got a ruling class that's controlling, 90% of the money and credit in the world, and a good share of them, most of them, are white. And the problem is that they don't want to share that with their brother whites in any way, no fashion at all. So how are you going to do this? How are you going to convince 2% of the population, say, of the United States, to give back or share the trillions of dollars that they've wrung out of the working class and other elements, even different races? It's one thing to talk about the white race, but another thing is to understand the various factions of the white race and how they clash and always have clashed. Hence, rather than being in any kind of contradiction of the particular religion that I embrace, and I hate that word too, religion, this manifesto is actually my own personal fulfillment of it. I have set forth for myself the task of writing a manifesto that can and will unify us, because it is my inescapable conclusion that the total unification of the worldwide struggle to save our white race is indeed what is best for our race at this point in time, and indeed all times. This introduction to this book could have been written in about 5 pages. It's a lot of repetition. Let's see. Indeed, what is best for our race at this point in time, and indeed all time, just like any other religious adherent. I would, of course, you know, any other religious adherent, the problem is that most religious adherents follow blindly somebody. And I don't respect any white person that follows blindly anyone. We got too much of that in the right wing. You see it with Plastic Man and people like. People crave somebody they can worship. And like Brando said in that film, Viva Zapato, there ain't people like that. They die, they betray, they go their way. You don't need a lot of strong leaders, but you need some really strong. Just like any other religious adherent, I would, of course, like to see the triumph of my own religion everywhere in the hearts and minds of white men. Well, I think might is right comes closer to that than about anything else. I have a lot more confidence in Might is Right than I did even Ben Klassen's books. However, the simple fact of the matter is that this has thus far proved unavailing. It behooves us, therefore, to unite on the non-religious grounds that are still possible. Loyalty to our kind in itself, just as Christian, Republican, or Democrat in America, does not help drop his religion to campaign for political change, nor do I, and furthermore, I would note for my fellow creators, as adherents of creativity are called, that Ben Klassen himself states in Nature's Eternal Religion, Book 2, Chapter 18, Section 4, that one of the various things we can do to stop our enslavement as a race is to form a political party or a political organization to create a power or influence block. And that is exactly what we are doing now with this manifesto. Well, that will fail because it starts from the wrong end. Most political parties start with a driving fanaticism that usually starts with guerrilla warfare against the system. They may get part of their thoughts from books, but it's always the men who are going to wield the sword who develop the power, not the books themselves. So if we're going to do that all over again, we're going to create a party or something, forget it. And that this is exactly what we are doing now with this manifesto. In addition, he states in NER Book 2, chapter 4, section 10, that someone can contribute his white race by founding a new worthwhile organization dedicated to the cause of his race. Well, you know, with organizations, what happens? Two people in the organization, say you got 20 people in your little organization, one or two people do all the work. That's what respect I have, or I have no respect for organizations. I have respect for struggles, physical struggles. I have no respect for organizations like parties and so forth, because most of the people do no work at all. Now, I would say back in the day when the anarchists were going strong, they were more prone to just do it. Even though they called themselves anarchists, they weren't really a close-knit, tight organization. They were individuals that loosely bound together to do physical things. That's not an organization as far as I'm concerned. Okay, and can enter politics and fight for the cause in the political arena. I started that, tried to do that back with Duke and I back in 75. That's what we tried back then. You know, back when I used to have a lot of respect for David Duke and like that. Let's go political. And we put a lot into it. He put it into it his way and I put it in my way, ran for office, got other people to run for office, and what came out of it? Zilch. So don't tell me that stuff again. Thus, the founder of creativity himself left open the possibility and even the suggestion that a creator should take the course of action that we are taking now, and hence the seeming inconsistency between the religious approach of creativity and the political approach. This manifesto does not actually exist. Well, both are wrong, that's why, and both of them are not successful. The only reason the Christian church is successful is because it killed millions of people and subjugated them and put dictators over them, and the church was a dictator. If you think Christianity spread around this world because there was a meek little guy walking around in shower sandals and sharing bread and fishes, you're crazy. That was not how Christianity was built. Christianity was built on the corpses of their perceived enemies and opposition. That's what got us into that Middle East thing, as the excuse of going into the Middle East to find the tomb of the baby Jesus, which never existed, and they killed thousands and thousands of Middle Eastern people, squandered their money out of the coffers of Europe. It was to grab the goodies, to steal what they could steal. You see, more like might is right. There are only two forms of unity for our people that are possible, the religious and the political. Well, that's bullshit, which includes everything else. It thus behooves, well, you could use the word political to cover like the Order British Wagon, I guess. Political by force, by ruthless force. It thus behooves, just like they use against us. The government's not democratic. They don't give a shit about your rights. You don't have rights anyhow. I'm sorry to be interrupting as I'm reading all this, but I get excited. You know me. It thus behooves us to seek the both of them so that at least one of them may be brought about. That's been around for a long time. There's been religion in the racist movement forever. And there's been racists in politics forever. But how often did it change anything? Because the one ingredient wasn't there. If you don't give us our way, we'll kick your fucking ass. And if we don't kick your ass, our sons and daughters will kick your ass. And if they don't kick your ass, the next generation will kick your ass. But we are going to kick your ass. And at least we could be as tough as the Viet Minh in South Vietnam. They were willing to fight on 100 years for their cause. The non-white races do better at fighting for their race by far than the whites. Even the blacks, who are low on the totem pole of natural life, they know enough to have a camaraderie among many of them. Not all of them, for sure. But it's sure a sad thing when the niggers in the ghetto got more balls and more esprit de corps to their race than most white guys. The religion that those of us who are creators embrace is fulfilled by these actions that will help save our white race from cultural, genetic, and biological destruction, and it's to that end that I personally inspire to take the present course of action. I state all this so that these matters may be entirely clear. Well, I went to a lot of creativity meetings in the past. In fact, I was still Identity Christian when I went to a meeting in San Diego and was introduced to Nature's Eternal Religion. And I read the preface and I liked it. I left the place with a box full of about 100 books, and I went out and got them out. And I became very, very supportive of the idea, but I did not become supportive of the way it was carried out and a lot of the people that were involved just with the normal bullshit like we always hear. And they ran it into the ground, and Ben Klassen spent all his fortune, or most of his fortune that his wife didn't get, trying to wake white people up. And he finally committed suicide in total disgust. And I don't, and I respect him for it, because he was in ill health, and he had spent all his money, and everybody was betraying him, and all the whole right wing were against him, especially the Christian factions couldn't stop going after him, just like they did George Lincoln Rockwell. You think that George Lincoln Rockwell was highly respected? Bullshit. And I got the tapes to prove it. They all went after him. They all called him a traitor. They all called him an FBI agent, all that kind of stuff. Talk about getting together and fighting for the white race. Every time he tried to, everybody undercut him. A lot of those people are still around, and now they say, oh, what a great guy George Lincoln Rockwell was. But at the time he was alive, he was their worst enemy. In addition, it is impossible to admit the fact that it was Ben Klassen himself who coined the term racial loyalty in the first place, and who must thus be given credit for that stroke of genius that finally explained the true basis of our entire cause. I tend to like might is right better. I like white might is better. I am thus happy to place that true basis front and center with this racial loyalist manifesto. Speaking of religion, what is said in the pages of the following about Christianity is meant to reflect basic traditional understanding of that religion is embraced by those racial loyalists who follow and practice it. Since this manifesto speaks for all who are loyal to their white race, its survival, its betterment, and its future, I've felt it important to provide a view of Christianity that is consistent with the loyalty, and to attack the idea of Christianity somehow requires, theologically, that its idea, adherents betray their own kind. This is especially important considering the fact that Christianity is today being used so effectively by our race traitor enemies to undermine our racial existence on earth at every turn, at least in the so-called West. My own personal disagreement with the religion is thus irrelevant here, and since why I have refused to allow that disagreement to intrude upon the discussion that follows. I don't like the sound of that. Christianity is a bitter, bitter enemy. Because it's based on nothing. Not based on facts. If they just show a few facts, it'd be different. But they conjure up and lie and create facts. And then you're supposed to have faith in it. Not evidence, faith. No, I want evidence. You can have the faith. A manifesto that speaks for all racial loyalists speaks for them regardless of religious differences. No, I don't think so. Just as the mainstream political parties contain adherents of numerous religious perspectives, so too it is the case with us. What separates us religiously does not separate us when it comes to the loyalty to our white race that we share. Well, then you're not serious. If you seriously accept the lies of Christianity and Christ's insanity, you can't possibly be 100% for the salvation of your own race. It's just not possible. Though I write this manifesto in English, it is true that a large amount of my brethren around the world have become proficient in that language in recent years. It is nevertheless very important that high-quality, faithful translations of this manifesto be produced as soon as possible in every language that our white people speak. This is because a book appearing in the native languages of our people around the world will always be more compelling for their attention and appreciation than expecting them to read it in a language that is culturally foreign to them. Regardless of whatever knowledge of it they may have, not only do many of our comrades not know the English language at all, especially in the Eastern Europe, but even for those who do, reading this manifesto in a language that is not their own is not likely to provide the same understanding or even regard as that which would be provided by reading it in one's own tongue. Each nation of our race has its own particular culture, and its language reflects that culture. Thus, we must appeal to the culture through the language that reflects it. I have in that vein deliberately tried to minimize my usage of uniquely Midwestern American expressions in an effort to make the translation of this manifesto into the various languages all the easier. In addition, I even encourage my name as well as to be translated into the various languages along with the rest of the manifesto so that we can defeat any jingoistic prejudice against it from the outside. In sum, we cannot allow any language or national barrier to stop the widespread dissemination and acceptance of this manifesto among racial loyalists, and we must surmount any such barriers that exist. Well, years ago, I tried this with the right wing. I tried to get them to learn Esperanto, which is a combination of Spanish and I forget what it is now. It's been so long. I tried to convince the right wing, white people, we need among the racial struggle a common language, and Esperanto is spoken largely around the world to a lot of people, and it's very easy to spread and learn. Not that it would be the best for the racial situation, but it would be provide easy communication between whites of all the countries. You know where that went. Right down the toilet with a lot of other my ideas. Okay, where are we at? In sum, we cannot allow any language or national barrier to stop the widespread dissemination and acceptance of this manifesto among all racial loyalists. We must surmount any such barriers that exist. Well, I don't entirely agree with that. I think that language is a product of race and culture. and race and culture develops separately in different parts of the world, you don't have to all speak the same language to understand the racial situation. In fact, maybe it's better that they not. I don't know. But I know one thing. Man is a tribal animal, and he developed along of cultural lines, and his language did too. And we don't have time to re-educate them all to speak English or German or something like that. We've got to work with what we've got because we're too far down the road to stop everything. And at this point, when I tried to get Esperanto going, that was 30 years ago. We're far too far down the road for that now. I may be a Frenchman, a Serb, a Russian, or an Italian, for example, but I am happy to have my name and words rendered into French, Serbian, Russian, and Italian in order to help impress upon all racial loyalists that the fact that this manifesto is for us all and not something to be disdained because it was written by a foreigner. Rather, though the author is indeed an American, it reflects the basic loyalty to our kind that we all share worldwide. I have also sought to provide a well-balanced account of our struggle worldwide to make sure, as much as possible, that this manifesto appeals to all the nations of our race. What omissions exist regarding the various nations by name are due either to the lack of space, my lack of familiarity with this particular circumstance, or the need to avoid missing the forest for the trees. As essential elements of our racial loyalist struggle are concerned, I was able to discuss some nations of our race more than others because I had the space to do so, and because I felt that the issues involved were especially important ones for our cause as a whole. Obviously, no national favoritism is either meant or implied. At the close of this manifesto, I have provided a list of outstanding works that will further educate the reader on the racial issue and other topics that bear upon racial loyalist struggle, including statistics on the harm caused by the non-white races to our society as well as the Jewish problem. I do this for at least four reasons. One, I would rather cite to other works that have preceded this manifesto than attempt to repeat what they say here, something that would really be impossible due to the amount of information involved. I believe that it is important that our adherents be guided in their education by best writers, thinkers, leaders that we have had. How about fighters? How about generals? How about warlords? I believe that it is important that we as racial loyalists give credit to those writers, thinkers, and leaders and avoid trying to reinvent the wheel unnecessarily with our espousals and for by including such a list of recommended reading. It is my hope that those who appreciate the works listed will support the mission of this manifesto and that this will hence broaden its appeal. That, though, does not mean that I personally endorse everything that these authors write. It only means, rather, that they have something great and worthwhile to communicate, and that our comrades would be benefited thereby. If I had left any work out, as undoubtedly I have, that only means that I am not familiar with it, something that can easily be rectified in the course of time. In particular, I would like to see the addition of more works from Europe, especially Northern and Eastern Europe. Since we all are racial loyalists, it is important that we support and learn from all the outstanding work that our fellow racial loyalists have written. Our loyalty to our blood demands that we value the efforts of all those who have fought for that blood. Every generation owes a debt to preceding ones that furnish it with the benefit of our labor, sacrifice, knowledge, and insight, and we must recognize and preserve these works that have formed so much of the basis for our own. We must learn from their wisdom for the sake of our own. Well, I don't think we've learned much from their wisdom. We certainly have been involved in fratricide for thousands of years, killing each other, whether it's religion or a king or presidents or what. We've been involved in fratricide against our own race for thousands of years, and that hasn't changed. In fact, it's increased. So what are we talking about here? Have we learned anything? No, I don't think so. Some of us have. Our white race today faces the most dangerous threat to its continued existence that it's ever faced, mostly from other white people, white capitalists, predatory capitalists, and sometimes other extreme forms like Marxist communism, which was actually created by the capitalists anyhow to cut off competition. The non-white races led by the Jews, I don't agree with that. I think the Jews are opportunists like everybody else. They're no more opportunistic than the white Christians on Wall Street. I think we have to straighten that out to keep spending chapters and chapters and chapters about the terrible Jews. The Jews... You just have to explain things right to a Jew. Either you're going to play the game our way or you're not going to play at all. They understand that. I was in Israel here a few months ago, and I found a lot of Jews to be very logical and understanding, to be perfectly honest. And almost none of them that I knew anybody met had anything to do with religion. In fact, a good share of them were atheists or something like that. Or just political. So this beating the Jew dead horse, I think, has gone too far with the right wing, and it's been an escape valve for the ruling class of white non-Jews to screw us all. You can give that to the Hollywood Nazis. They'll love to run with that. And worse still is in the fact that our white people do not presently even realize that their very being is under attack. It will take all the devotion, discipline, and direction that we can muster to stave off and defeat this existential threat against our kind. Well, it should have been started at least hundreds of years ago. And in this country, at least by the Civil War, we do not have the dubious luxury of forever allowing the movement of our people's survival to go forth in a thousand different directions piecemeal. While our enemies are united in their will to destroy us, and I think there's far more of us united to destroy ourselves, myself, I believe that, rather, we must band together now and forever defeat the threat that is arrayed against us. We must band together. Why not one guy going out and do what needs to be done? That's why I like Lone Wolf. I can't blame anybody else for nothing being done. I have all the know-how and equipment to do something if I decide to do it. I don't need to band together. It'd be nice if you had a lot of people, but you don't have to band together. You got to be one mean son of a bitch, the most meanest son of a bitch in the valley. The question is simply whether we have the balls to do it. That's the end of the introductory to the manifesto, which I'm a little disappointed in nothing against Matt Hale, but in fact, the whole manifesto probably could have been written in that many pages. Most good manifestos, and I've got a few around here, say it all in, you know, less than 50 pages. Too much repetition, and anyhow, I'm disappointed with that particular part of the book. Now, the next thing we're going to go on to, and not today, is who we are and what we want. And I hope he doesn't continue to talk to us like we're children, because most of the people who are going to read this book have been around, at least in the right-wing racial cause, for quite some time. You don't think he's going to sell many of these to the man on the street, do you? I don't think so. Okay, that's it for today with your old cynical Tommy, terrible cynical Tommy, who just says it like he sees it and sees it like he says it. And that's the way I'm going to live, and that's the way I'm going to die, man. Okay, 14:05, and I'll be back tomorrow on Wotan's Day.
You must tread on the necks of your enemies if you would win renown. It is success that makes the great man, was Napoleon's dicta. The whole duty of man in this world is to succeed, to help himself defeat his foes, outstrip his rivals. He who conquers not is conquered. He who is unable to trample roughshod over others will assuredly be trampled by them. In the strength of his arm, man eats his bread. In the sweat of his brow and brain, the slave earns his bread for a master. All emotional rhetoric about love one another, learn to labor and to wait, etc., has a tendency to paralyze effort, to make victims rather than victors of ascensions. Every man's hand is against every other man, except where living individuals have formed temporary co-partnerships. When one partner breaks the mutual agreement, then the combine is necessarily dissolved, and all become enemies as before. Fraternity between carnivores is as transient as the smoke of the morning. It is a pro tem expedient. Two hungry lions may engage to hunt together, but should one attempt to seize more than his fair proportion of the prey, then it is woe to the vanquished. Self-preservation first, foremost, above all things, and at whatever cost, is the law of the jungle. So must it be among human carnivores. So it is, for society is a jungle. Therefore, O reader, go forth and win. Possess all you can of earth's good things. Man does live by bread alone. Be strong and fear not, for all obstruction melts away before real strength of deed and strength of character. Nothing succeeds like success. Do not quibble over the order of your succeeding, but succeed. Thou shalt give thy heart to no god, for that is idiocy. Neither shalt thou love thy neighbors as thyself, for that is madness. Let nil desperandum be your motto even to the death. If you fail, you are righteously detestable, but if you triumph, thrice blessed art thou. The great vice of our age is cowardice. Glory and honor be unto him that wins, but anathema, maranatha, be upon the head of him that fails. Failure is not only disgrace, but practical proof of organic incompetence. Power and proprietorship cover a multitude of sins, of alleged sins, but men and women, especially women, have an overflowing fund of sympathy and forgiveness for the bold bad man if he is victorious. How women admire men of leonine resolution and eagle principles. How they detest cowardice, goodness, feebleness, effeminacy, failure. There is no character in history so universally applauded as the bold bad rebel and the mighty conqueror. Therefore, get you gold and land and power somehow. If foiled and baffled one way, try another. When there's a will, there are a thousand ways. If the worn and beaten tracks are intentionally blockaded against you, do not hesitate to cut out a new highway through the jungle for yourself. Never mind the pulpiteers and editors, they are hired to blind and blockade you. Above all things, do not follow the multitude, for it tramples downward, ever downward, along Via della Mortes to abysses of poverty, chains, and shame. Retreat not, turn not aside to the right hand, nor to the